This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, greetings everyone. Thanks for being on the call. Those that were on last week, I apologize for sort of aborting the call in the middle, but turns out I had the flu and it was all just too much. But welcome to this call. We'll pick up where we left off. We will take attendance from the Adobe Connect room. Is there anyone that's on the phone that's not on the Adobe Connect so that we can make sure we have you in attendance in the meeting?
Hi, Jonathan. David here. I'm on the phone, but not yet on the... Oh, I am now on the Adobe Connect.
You are. Anyone else that's just on the phone?
Hello, Jonathan. Ravi here. I'm just on the phone and not on the Adobe.
Okay, great. So staff, please record that Ravi's participating on the call. And are there any updates to statements of interest? Okay. So let's dive right in. I think the first thing on our agenda is to get some progress updates. There were sub-team calls last week for both the competition and choice sub-team and the safeguards and trust sub-teams. So I don't know who would like to go for it first, but I'll just ask Laureen if she'd like to lead it off on giving us an update of how things are going in the sub-team and bring the rest of the team up to date.
Sure. We had a good call last week. We continue to go through our...
Did we just lose Laureen?
I think we did.
All right. Let's wait a little bit then. I don't want to just have Jordan launch in without her, so... We'll wait for her to try to get back on, I guess. Is she still on the Adobe Connect? Yeah, it looks like she is.
Yes, Jonathan, she still is, and I just disabled her mic. I just enabled her mic, excuse me.
Enabled her mic.
Yes.
Looks like she dropped out of the Adobe room.
Oh.
Let me try to call her.
Okay, thanks. If she wasn't ready to go, she just could have said so. Very dramatic.
There she is.
Maureen, can you hear via the Adobe Connect? Because if you can hear, we'll have to go ahead while you get connected.
Okay, I think I'm reconnecting.
You are. Great, Maureen, go ahead.
Sorry about that. Okay, so we had a productive call last week. We continue to go through our list of topic areas with an eye towards prioritizing them, which we in fact did. We also came up with a reading list for our group, so that we can look at potential data sources for our analysis. We now, with the fine help of ICANN staff, have a dedicated space on our part of the website where we can put that reading list, which includes some of which includes the ICANN study that just came out on the DNS abuse. It also includes the Secure Domain Foundation's paper on the business case for proactive anti-abuse, and also a link to a, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it properly, but a new John report concerning issues of consumer trust, among other things. So we continue to now think about what kind of timelines we want and deadlines we want to set for ourselves concerning our priority topics. And also, I think the reading list is going to help us with that. And I think that's about it. I'm still also hoping to get more information from our competition folks about how they're approaching this kind of interesting startup time where we're identifying data and waiting for data and not quite analyzing data yet. So that's all for now.
Thanks, Lorene. This is Jonathan. I just want to ask you a little bit on substance as far as your prioritized list of topics. That might be the thing that's most interesting to the group. In other words, did anything fall off the list, or I mean, that how did that prioritization process turn out? What made the cut? What didn't? Or what's likely to get deprioritized?
Well, nothing fell off our list. And I knew you were going to ask me that question. And great, Alice says, or some helpful staff person, I'm assuming it was Alice, has very helpfully put our document up on the screen. So what you can see is that, our consumer end user behavior was what our group prioritized as its first item, and you can look at some of the bullet points within that list. Public awareness of the new GTLDs. Does the public know the difference between a legacy GTLD and a new GTLD? How new GTLDs impact user expectations, and this goes to a lot of the issues that I think David had raised in some of his prior comments about how the very name of a domain may create expectations, and of course that also funnels into the whole issue of domain names in regulated sectors and the specific safeguards that are connected to those. And then you'll see that the issues delve a little bit into reporting problems and safeguards. And then further down within this same category, we have DNS abuse, of course, which is a huge issue, and consumer user behavior, registry privacy policies. So there's an awful, awful lot of topics within there. And we probably still have more work to do to sequence those. But then next, you'll see we have developed countries, which is a whole host of separate topics dealing with outreach, funding, adequate access to assistance, the rules of the road, confidence that the process is fair. And then last, we have procedural issues which include ICANN's role in enforcement of safeguards, public interest commitments, and dispute resolution processes. And then, of course, we have like an other category for things that come up and some placeholders for data needs that we've identified.
That's great, Laureen. Thanks. We had a little bit of a conversation about the overlap, if you will, between the application and review process and its emphasis on the developing world and where you guys were with respect to trust and safeguards in that same context. So it looks to me like you still have a lot of things in here that are about the application process, which seems more oriented toward the application process and less toward end user trust, I guess. But because we've defined consumers to include, include registrants, but I mean, I don't know that it's including registries. So I mean, I think we're trying to make that distinction. It might be worth trying to find a way to parse the developing country section of this so that we divide it up between the two efforts.
I agree. And it may, in fact, make more sense for the issues that we've raised with the fairness of the application process to really be considered by the group as a whole when we deal with application process issues. So, we're definitely open to sectioning that off as appropriate and perhaps refocusing more on how the new GTLDs are impacting the developing countries in terms of our efforts.
That's right. I think that makes sense. And maybe as we go over some of this in the application and review section of our discussion, if there were things that you guys came up with that we left out when we did our brainstorming on the process, be sure and raise them and we'll get them into the list, and then you guys can focus on the end user stuff. Does anybody else have questions or comments for Laureen, either members of her team that have additional recollections or people that aren't on the sub-team that have questions about these issues or things they'd like to add? Go ahead and raise your hand if you do. Or speak up if you're on the not on the Adobe Connect. All right, Laureen, that was obviously a perfect presentation.
Left you all speechless.
I'm just trying to recover.
Right.
All right, thanks a lot, Laureen, for the update. Jordan, let's go to you. That's Jordan Buchanan. Are you on mute, Jordan? We're not hearing you. I think he's still trying to get his microphone going, working. Can we try to call Jordan, Pam?
Yes, Jonathan, I'll call him. I still have his number from yesterday.
Thanks. And David, I doubt very much that computers inside Google can even navigate to Bing.
I'm quite sure about that.
Although I do remember a pretty funny news story where Google was like crazy search results to see if Bing was trying to copy them, and they discovered that Bing on some of the search results being copied.
Jonathan, I'm just going to test. Can you see me at all if I speak like this?
I'm sorry?
How can you hear me? It's Megan speaking. I've been trying to test my microphone to see if you can actually hear me. Can you hear me?
No, we can hear you just fine, Megan.
Oh, good. How exciting. Don't worry, I'm not going to say anything. I'll wait my turn. I was just testing in the talk.
But you had promised us, Megan. We're going to have to add this. Add this to the list of trust issues.
Exactly. Don't worry. I'll try to be quiet. I was just taking advantage of the quiet to say something.
All right.
Hi, everyone. This is Jordan Buchanan now on the on audio.
All right, go for it.
Now with two-way audio communication. Thanks, Jonathan. So the Competition and Consumer Choice subteam has spent most of the time since Marrakesh taking a look at issues related to data gathering. I think right now staff is presenting a document that we've put together, which takes the set of questions, of high-level questions, that we identified that the subteam would like to address over the course process. And there, the process of each to it, each of the topics starting to identify what the data is around. And the spreadsheet takes it one step further and starts to identify the specific data elements that we are interested in, and then maps that to on the right hand side of this spreadsheet, which you can't see. Oh yes, if you have scrolling powers, you might be able to. Yeah, you can see. Oh no, this already is L3. Yeah, so each subtopic there's an element of that we can actually, so we've gone through this initially by the source piece that the in many cases that data is either already available or is currently being collected or is planned to be collected through the analysis group or Nielsen efforts. We've identified cases where we're still 100% be able to get the data. So, for example, the analysis group is asking these and registers for price data related to CCTLDs and prices respectively. It's one of theirs. Well, and I think we're not very successful in getting a set of CCTLD data. In this report.
Jordan, it's Laureen. We're all having trouble hearing you.
This is definitely the only audio I have. I wonder if
you sound better now.
Huh.
How's your signal?
Let me look and see. I have many bars.
All right, well, you sound good now. So just keep going.
Right, well, I won't move from this spot, I guess. I hope this works. In any case, I was hoping the thing is, obviously, the announcement to obtain on CTLD and registrar prepping with limited success. They're going to be looking to get the data, and we will, the group of the subcommittee, the CTLD, more generally, will be able to help reach out to those communities to get them involved with, or get them more interested in participating in the analysis group study. Other than that, we also went through where Stan helped us go through a second exercise on data gathering, which was even more detailed, where he started to map data elements into a, basically something that we'll be able to consume at the sub-team, where he identified specific layout of the into table, and will basically be a deliverable to an appendix to the report or something like that. But it makes sure that we actually know how we're going to be using the data and how we'll lay it out at the end. So once you finish this process, identifying the sources, I think we'll have to go through a similar exercise to what Stan's tried for some data with all of the other analysis efforts that we think we're going to need to engage in as a next step. So that's the thing that we've been on the data gathering front. We had an initial last week's call to finalize what our data gathering would look like. However, I was very slow in putting together this spreadsheet, so we were running a little bit behind schedule, and we've now extended that to our next call a week from today for people to see what the data are. So I hope to be able to allow this to go and actually pursue the data need. The other we're about to begin on starting this week, and we expect through the space medium, which has been in early June, is to start addressing the question of what are the definitions of markets that we're using for analysis. That, I think, is a very important question, and there's some work done on in the past. I think the review team as a whole has been sent the DOJ paper from several years. We'll be an analysis group put together their own analysis on this in their initial study. We'll be making best effort to identify probably not authoritative what the definition is, but at least a few different hypotheses of what possible might be. And we will use that to then drive the rest of our work answering that competition, what competition looks like within those respective markets. That process is key next week to an educational session that I think Stan and Greg from Analysis Group are putting together. For those of us who are not understand the notion of the definite of what it means to define a market. So we're going to be getting some on how economists approach the question, as well as the relevant vocabulary things to this going forward. So looking forward to that. Yesterday on the leadership prep for this call, Laura expressed some participating in that table discussion. And I think that sounds like a great idea to broaden the invitation to anyone from the review team as a whole who's interested in joining the call in order to hear the presentation as well. So and may staff and send around details. So looking final data because it's the educational part of the call first, and then people that are not on the sub team could drop off if they wanted to just get paid. And so Publix, I think that takes us to the point of the competition by sub teams.
Thanks, Jordan. It's clear for a lot of it and dropped out for part of it. If I can boil it down to some big topics that are important to the group as a whole, one of the things Jordan mentioned is that the analysis group has just sent out their requests for data from the contracted parties. And if you recall, they had trouble getting data out of registrars at the initial part of the study. The registrars are not contractually obligated to participate in economic studies the same way that registries are. So I think what Jordan reiterated was an email from Elisa earlier that anybody with contacts in the registrar community, if we can all work together to kind of encourage participation in the analysis group data collection, then we could get better data than if they're forced to just do it manually via screen scraping, as they did before. We're going to do a little bit of outreach directly via the registrar stakeholder group. Elisa, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I know you're in the middle of jury duty, but have we formulated some kind of question or request for the registrar stakeholder group so that we can put Graham and others to work inside the community?
Hi, Jonathan. No problem. So we did send out a letter to them beforehand, before the data request from analysis group actually went out. So that went out more as a heads up. We haven't sent anything yet in addition. I guess I kind of wanted to work with the group to see what exactly we wanted to include in there.
It seems like we want to get our insiders working as soon as possible. So are you saying you want to make that a topic of discussion for this group prior to our outreach to Graham and others on the inside of the registrar stakeholder group?
When you say, I guess what I'm wondering is, do you want to send something directly to Graham with the data request in it, or I don't think we'd ever really settled on how we were going to approach this since we did already send something out to the registrar stakeholder group, although I know you wanted to do kind of more individual outreach. So it's up to you. I'm happy to put something together. I just wasn't sure what the best approach was.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer either. So I can take it as a to-do item to reach out to Graham to make sure that he received that and to find out if there was I guess it was Graham and Jeff, right, primarily that are signing up to try and be our advocates inside. So I will try to reach out to both of them to see if they need any additional information from us with respect to that data request. Carlos here in the chat has suggested a letter from the team, from the review team to the registrar stakeholder group. Do other folks think that that's a good idea? Because we can draft a formal letter from the review team to the registrar stakeholder group if folks think that's a good idea. That's Carlos.
Ravi here, just a suggestion.
Yes, sir.
Jonathan, I'd just like to suggest if for the Asia-Pacific region, the APTLD general manager, Leonard, could be addressed. And since they themselves do an analysis of the CCTLD and also try to understand how its growth with the GTLD and the new GTLD is progressing, they may be able to provide insight on the Asia-Pacific region, so which is just one of the regions in our review team study.
Okay. What do we need to do to initiate that process?
The letter that you intend to send from the review team to the registrar community, a similar letter could go to the general manager of the APTLD, Leonid, so he could furnish or help the review team, since the APTLD is part of the ICANN, overall group.
Okay. So, staff, I think barring an objection, let's think about a letter from the review team, both of those letters. And are you guys able to generate drafts for those that we can circulate to our list and try to move forward?
Jonathan, just jumping in, this is Laureen.
Yes.
I'm not against any formal letter by any means, but I do think that these issues are more palatable if they are discussed first, you know, person to person or voice to voice, rather than someone receiving a very formal letter. So I would just encourage folks who have direct connections to give people a heads up and talk about why this is important and how it's much better to get good information directly from the source as opposed to relying on something that's less reliable and or not as accurate. But I would encourage discussions to happen first before we make, you know, something that's looked on as very formal and perhaps resource intensive, for example.
No, and certainly this wouldn't be in lieu of those discussions by any means, Lorene. I think we're trying to figure out all of the different channels that we have into the registrar community to deliver this message. I think Carlos was just suggesting a letter from us as well. I mean, there's already been a quote-unquote formal data request that has come from the analysis group. I mean, part of what we probably need to do is make sure that we get confirmation from folks that the right people have received it, because despite ICANN staff's best efforts, the feedback that we got from some of registrar insiders is that perhaps the wrong people received the data request. So we probably need to actually get confirmation that everyone's seeing it as well. So I don't think any of that should stop us from thinking about what a letter might look like, and we can decide when and if to send it, but it might be worth thinking about what a letter from us looks like and making the talking points that we'll use individually, and we can decide later when to send it. David, you've had your hand up for a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I was going to say, I agree. I think both ways works. Carlos's point and exactly as I just put there with Laureen on the chat, I think that works as well. And I was just going to offer, I know Michele well in the registrar stakeholder group, so I'm quite happy to push that direction as well and get another inroad into the registrar stakeholder group to get this thing moving forward.
Oh, that's excellent, David. Yeah, Michele's a good guy. So, I mean, let's work all of our connections, whoever has them, and meanwhile, I'll take it as a to-do to reach out to Graham and Jeff to see what they can do in terms of intelligence gathering, at the very least, about how that request is received and whether or not the right people got it. But staff, if you can begin to think about what a letter might look like and circulate something, then we can have it be doing those preparations in parallel. Aliza, go ahead.
Thank you. So we're happy to work on a letter, kind of a more targeted letter, asking for people to keep an eye out for this. I also wanted to add that our practice, and this was last year, I was thinking we would do the same this year, was to follow up with all of the contracted parties who we reached out to from our with our registrar services, our engagement team. So it would be each of their accounts. So there'd be a little bit more of a personal connection there, reminding them, asking them if they got the letter, and so on and so forth, to see if they're planning on replying. So we're kind of using our own resources as well to encourage participation.
That's great, Elisa, and I think we definitely need to do that again. And I don't know the source of the disconnect last time, because as you know, some of the pushback we got is that people didn't seem to think that they'd gotten requests. And part of it is that it's secret who got data requests. So that increases the complexity of this process a little bit, in that we don't actually know the registrars to whom we sent the requests, right? Again, if we can just sort of create a little bit of a peer environment in which taking these requests seriously is a good idea, that will probably help. David, I'm assuming that's an old hand.
It is. Sorry, I had it up for so long it's gone rigid.
Okay. I know registry's got requests since there's been discussion about it. Excellent. Thanks, Jordan. The registries were actually quite responsive last time, so I guess we're less concerned about registries because they've got it built into their contracts a little bit more formally as well. Any other comments on that process? The other thing that Jordan mentioned that you may not have heard clearly is that the next competition and choice subteam call is going to begin with a little bit of a lecture or led discussion about how economists define markets, and so it's a little bit of a learning session. And Lorene had expressed interest in being invited to that call, and so we wanted to make sure that everybody was invited to that call. So, in other words, competition and choice, the next sub-team call, may be of interest to everyone because at least the first part of it will be a discussion of how markets are defined, and we can all kind of get on the same page and get the same vocabulary about that. So we'll be circulating the schedule for that, but keep an eye out for it because it's a special meeting of the sub-team. It may be of interest to more. Any questions about that for Jordan? And then I guess that was it for the things that sort of rose to the surface for me, Jordan. Is there anything else you wanted me to emphasize? I guess I'm curious about whether or not this process has led you to believe that we can get most of what we want from existing sources or from additional work by analysis group, or do we think that there's going to be additional studies altogether in the competition space that we hadn't previously thought of?
Yeah, based on the this is Jordan Buchanan again for the recording. Based on the exercise so far, we've been able to identify existing or planned data sources for almost everything, with the exception of secondary market data, which there's still some discussion of how we plan to get that. But generally it's looking quite good without necessarily the need for follow-on data gathering.
Excellent, Jordan. Thank you. That was very clear. Any other questions for Jordan and the competition and the choice sub-team? Okay, seeing no hands, let's go ahead and move on. And Elisa is going to update us on the surveys and studies and where they are and in which process. Elisa, take it away.
Thanks very much. And I'm just going to upload a document while I am talking to you here. So I wanted to give you just brief updates on the Nielsen and the analysis group. I guess I'll start with analysis group since we were just talking about that. So as John mentioned, as I mentioned, we sent out the data requests. We've been getting some replies, mostly from registries, as Jonathan said. They actually have a provision in their contract that requires them to participate in any economic studies with any data that that we might request that might be deemed necessary to such a study. So we've started to get some replies on this. I wanted to give the group a heads up on one point in this data request. So at the group's request and after some conversations with analysis group, we also included a request for pricing information on premium domain names. We've gotten a couple of responses back with concerns about, and I say we, analysis group, has actually received some responses from registries that are concerned about sharing this information in an explicit manner. So we're not yet sure if we're going to be able to receive enough data to draw accurate enough conclusions about it or to see trends, but that's an area where we might face some difficulty in getting the data that was requested, and I wanted to give the group a warning about that. The problem with the provision in the registry agreement, it leaves it very vague as to what data a study author can request. It basically says any data that might be deemed necessary to conducting a study. So it kind of leaves it open to interpretation. So we're working with the registries on this and with analysis group on this. You know, in terms of the basic data that we received last time, that seems to be fine on wholesale pricing and other points. So we anticipate receiving that, but the premium pricing area is some place where it might be difficult to get everything that we're hoping for. So that's on analysis group. I guess I'll pause there if there are any further questions before I move on to Nielsen.
Alisa, this is Jonathan. I guess I missed what category of data was it that the registries expressed concern about, is it a concern that transcends the notion of anonymization and et cetera that the analysis group would go through?
Yes, so the concern is related to prices on premium names, and basically they're unwilling to provide explicit data for strings and the pricing that associates with it. Every registry has a different response on this, it may be difficult to get very detailed transactional level, not transactional level, but pricing at the string level for premium names.
Will we be able to get any kind of aggregated data out of them? What's the nature of the concern?
The concern is that it's highly sensitive, competitive information. Some may be willing to provide aggregated data. Others may not. I don't have all of the answers yet, but I know that it's an issue that's been raised a few times with analysis groups. So I'm hearing all of this secondhand, but that's the concern that's been raised.
Okay.
It's Lorena. Just a quick question. So there's a contractual requirement to provide this information, but the thought is that it's not clear enough to actually enforce. I'm just a little confused about that.
Sure. So, and I am not an attorney, obviously, but the contractual provision or the provision in our contract that requires cooperation with an economic study leaves it very open which data may be requested. And may be required to submit. So it kind of leaves a question open to interpretation in terms of what data a registry may be required to provide. Any other questions?
I guess not, Alisa. We'll just have to cross that bridge when we get to it if we need to try to find another way to look. I mean, I think premium pricing is pretty important to the group, so we may just need to look at other ways to get to or derive that data. We're
right.
Trouble getting it from them directly.
Exactly. And as I said, it's not that it's a blanket no. It's that in some cases we may be getting aggregated data, in some cases it may be presented in a different format. So it may be difficult for analysis group to do the type of analysis you discussed with them. So I kind of just wanted to present that as a heads up. And also it might be a topic you want to discuss with your registry friends if they're asking about the studies and what data you're requesting.
All right, Jordan's done, chose a very interesting time to go silent on our call. I guess maybe that wasn't a coincidence, but we'll ask Jordan to potentially work his contacts in the registry stakeholder group on that issue. Do you want to move on to Nielsen?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So on Nielsen, Nielsen has begun to translate the survey and program it into their software so that they may actually start fielding it to their panels of consumers. Last week, I think it was on Friday, I sent an email specifically to the Nielsen team. So we're looking ahead a little bit to the registrant survey. And Nielsen anticipates getting us a draft of that questionnaire, I think within about a month or so. So in preparing for that, I put together this document you see before you in the Adobe Connect room of questions and topics which have come up in various discussions in our face-to-face meetings and on our calls about questions that we thought we could postpone to the registrant survey. So I went through the consumer survey. I went through notes from past meetings. And these are kind of the major topics I found from our email list and so on and so forth. This is by no means an exhaustive list, and as I think I said in my email, this is not your last chance for giving feedback on the registrant survey, but I wanted to give Nielsen a little bit of a leg up in terms of preparing any updates to the registrant questionnaire from last year's version. So that by the time you received a draft of it, it starts to at least reflect some of the conversations we've had to date. So that's pretty much it. I've circulated this list. If you have any additions that you'd like to make sure Nielsen addresses before we get to the first draft of the questionnaire, I'd ask that you send me any comments or feedback by this Friday. And I think that's all I had on that project. Any comments? Megan, I see your hand up.
Can you hear me at all? I'm not very good at squashing my cheek against the screen, as David recommends. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, Megan.
Is it working? I just put a message in the chat. I had out the .eu use be added to this question. I asked this quite a while ago. Only for the European use, because we have two alternatives for every European participant. That is their national CCTLD or the .eu CCTLD. So if you don't ask that question, you get a rather skewed answer. So I think we should add that somehow. If you want some specific language, I can add it. But I have asked this a couple of times before. Okay?
So, Megan, your microphone's distorting a little bit, but if I can clarify, you're just reiterating what you put in the chat, which is about including .eu in the questions asked to European respondents. So, Elisa, does that ring a bell, and is that something that we can still do?
Yes, it does, and I think the list of responses you're seeing on here is from an old version of the survey, so I think that will be reflected, but thank you for the reminder. I'll add that into the list.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for Elisa on the current state of the surveys? And like I said, the next process for the Nielsen sub-team is to look at questions for the registrant survey. So if you have an interest in that and didn't already get an email on that, let Elisa know that you want to be part of that discussion. Any other questions for Elisa? Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Elisa, for the update.
Thank you.
So I think I'm next here. I want to pick up the conversation that we began a little bit last week and that we've done a little bit online because the staff have created this great document that sort of went through the slides that Jeff provided with the brainstorming that the PDP on subsequent procedures had done in their brainstorming session. And we're looking for areas of interest to our group, areas where we consider it to be kind of a low risk for them to proceed, you know, in parallel to us, and areas where we think there's a high risk that we'll be making some substantial suggestions that might change the course of their process. And so that's sort of the discussion that we're trying to have with the subsequent procedures of PDP. There's been a little bit of discussion on the list, but what I wanted to do was kind of boil this down a little bit into some discussion topics so that we're not just going point by point through that spreadsheet. So I just created a quick little PowerPoint to get the get our juices flowing here and have a little bit of discussion about this about this topic. So I just went into each one. So does everybody have control, or should I say next slide, or what's the nature with the PDF? I don't see a scroll bar, so, oh yeah, there it is. So if everybody could scroll down to the application review slide. In going back and looking at the document that we created as part of our brainstorming session, our interests boiled down to three big categories. One was sort of accessibility and awareness, and I put awareness there, but it, you know, it all sort of comes down to the accessibility of the process, whether that was the developing world or underserved communities. And so part of how I thought we should look at the overlap with the subsequent procedures PDP is that there are going to be areas where we are looking at similar topics but through a different lens or through a specific lens that may affect how we want to interact with the PDP. So, for example, on the issue of the application process itself, they in their the PDP folks in their brainstorming process suggested that they're going to sit down and interview the applicants and just get feedback on what that process was like and how it might have been improved and when was it inconvenient, et cetera, and get down to kind of a fine level of detail about the process itself. And I think that where we ended up with our brainstorming is that it was less of a focus on the process in at such a granular level, but about how well the process served communities and the developing world, and that was the lens through which we looked. So I think what that would likely mean is that we would try to coordinate with them in their interview process, but probably let their interview process proceed, but try to potentially have input into the questions that are asked or coordinate with them and how it's done. But it also may mean that we are trying to ask questions of some different people. Like we may want to look at the people who dropped out of the application process, or try to identify those, who in some way did or should have expressed interest and didn't, and interview them. So it could very well be that we're going to be trying to reach out to non-applicants and try to find out why they didn't apply or aborted applications and why that happened. The second you know big subtopic in our brainstorming session was end user confusion and harm from strings. So that was something that received a lot of attention in our brainstorming session. And then finally was this discussion of sort of GAC participation in the process. So that boiled down to kind of the advice process, how GAC interacted with the formulation of the guidebook, et cetera, how advice was formulated, how it was ingested by the process, and also how things were expressed as public interest commitments and the efficacy of that. So I wrote this slide because this is really what we ended up saying we wanted to study, and I wanted, first of all, just to ask if people feel that this is enough and a good focus for the team, or if there's anything that we're leaving out from the standpoint of the application and review process. Because that, it is a fairly focused way of looking at the application review process that's much more focused and a more focused vector, if you will, into the question than the subsequent procedures PDPD will be taking. So I just wanted, before I talk to those folks and present this, wanted you to see that it really boiled down to these three areas and make sure that everybody was comfortable with that. So I'll pause for a second to see if people have questions or suggestions about that. But this is what it boils down to in our brainstorming process. Okay, I don't see any hands, so I'm going to move on. So if you would advance your screen to the next slide that says some questions across the top. Oh, Megan, your hand is up. Go ahead.
I put my comments in the chat because I'm not sure that you'll be able to hear me, despite being almost embracing my computer.
Okay, so I put a question in the
chat. And it was just a question. Yeah.
So I don't understand the question given the context, because accessibility and awareness is the first thing that I mentioned. So that's what ease of access for applicants is. So that was, in fact, yes, a very big part of what we wanted to study, and that's what I meant by accessibility. Okay. So then back on the next slide, some questions that sort of fall under this lens, and that in the document that was prepared by staff, they may have interpreted things differently than the group would interpret. So I wanted again to raise them as questions for the group and reach some conclusion about it. One of the things that was sort of shown to be low interest in the staff document was the notion of application fees. But it occurs to me that application fees could end up being a big part of the accessibility question. So it seemed to me that we wanted to make sure that the fee structure was something that was an area of focus for us, but that again, we would look at it only through the lens of accessibility. I'm going to go through these. Please raise your hand or comment. I'll read the chat as well as we go along. The same is true for the application submission period. There's some mention of it that there might be some interest, but again, I think we will look at this through the lens of accessibility. So, stop me if you think that doesn't make sense. And then finally, one of the bullets that's in there is about registrant protection. And, I think that this might be an area where we're looking at the filter process, the evaluation process, and whether those bars were set too high or made too complex or in some way disadvantaged applicants with fewer resources, et cetera. So this idea of applicant review and some of the registrant protection mechanisms are probably going to be relevant to us as well. Application visual adjustments opening on the screen. Okay. So Jamie asked the question that accessibility includes costs for operating in TLD as well. So I think that's a good question, Jamie. The context for that might be in the registrant protection or applicant review process sections, right? In other words, were we setting a bar that was too high for people to participate? You may mean that in a different way. In other words, should we be looking more generally at the cost for operating a TLD? And maybe we should, that isn't one of the things that they looked at in the subsequent procedures, but maybe we should add it as a bullet ourselves, which is looking at the cost structure for being a TLD and seeing if there's a way to make some recommendations around that. If the application fee is zero, what is the impact on the applicant? Doesn't have resources to run a TLD? That's right. And as Dan mentioned, it's also something we talked about with competition. And so I'm going to get to that as well, Dan, the competition. So this is just the application and review process right now that we're talking about. But in our focus on the developing world, it seems like we need to probably address the cost of running a TLD. That makes sense to everyone. Carlos, you have your hand up. Megan, I think that's an old hand, but if it's not, leave it up. Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, please. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello? Okay, thank you very much. This is Carlos for the record. I want to react to Jamie's question, and as far as I remember, we had a very early slide in the NAS report that showed that just registering the domain name was only a small part of having a full presence in the internet, a web page and services and so on. And I think this is really relevant and is more on our side than on the side of the subsequent procedures people. They will remain focused only on the application fees. I don't think they care about the follow-up cost. But I think it's very relevant in the developing world, underserved communities, the question of the all back-end services that you need additional to your domain name. Thank you very much.
That's great, Carlos. So I think we agree with Jamie's question that in addition to the application process, that in whether or not the new TLD program serve the developing world, we need to look at cost as well. And I guess we'll do that under the application evaluation process since it's already part of the registrant protection and review process. So let's just make sure that we add that. But I think we're in agreement on that. The other issue was an accreditation program that the subsequent procedures PDP might recommend. And I just wanted to raise this for discussion, and it may or may not be of interest to us, but right now, in the previous round, the process was to evaluate each application in total, and even though a number of applicants were using the same back-end service providers, those back-end service providers got apparently evaluated again for each application. And so I think there's percolating the notion of some kind of a back-end service provider accreditation program that would allow there to be a kind of a list of approved back-end service providers so that that evaluation wouldn't need to be so redundant going forward in any subsequent procedures. So that sounds like a very practical suggestion. I guess my question for the group is, again, from an accessibility standpoint, and I guess in particular in the developing world, do we think that there's a possibility of exclusion in such an accreditation process, and should we be trying to pay attention to that conversation or express some caution about that recommendation? Carlos, I think that's an old hand, or is it new?
Sorry, it's old.
Okay, then Stan, I'll go to you.
I just point out there that one of the data sources that I've been looking at has information on back-end providers linking them to registries. And so a question we should be looking at is the extent to which back-end providers are in fact being used. I suspect that their presence makes it possible for smaller registries to be viable because they're able, in fact, to take advantage of the scale economies that a back-end provider offers. And that's the question we can answer empirically. To what extent are back-end providers being used?
Great, Stan. I think that's a great question to be answered. And, again, I think as we're looking at it in the competition and choice subteam, we want to remain aware about whether or not those economies of scale that you mentioned were sufficiently large or are going forward that they that particularly small registries are able to exist in the marketplace, or whether something else needs to happen to support them. Thank you. Carlos says I should be able to just put people's hands down. That may be it could be that type of capability. Okay, so that's the application and evaluation process. So I think that that will give us a lot of guidance in talking to the subsequent procedures chairs about the things they're looking at and the lens through which we're looking. I think that we'll participate with them in some of their applicant surveys, but probably supplement the questions and potentially look to more broadly survey a broader category of wannabe applicants or partial applicants, if you will. On the competition and choice section, I wanted to just open up the discussion that started on the list, which may just come down to semantics, which is this issue of market segmentation or DCLD differentiation and the implications for non-price competition. I think that Jordan had attempted to find a generalized way of expressing that the distinction between types of TLDs might not be an area of focus for us, which is different than talking about a string differentiation as a type of choice and a type of non-price competition. So I mean, really, the source of this was actually talking a little bit about brand TLDs and their relevance to our process, and in the competition sub-team prioritization process, this notion of drawing these types of distinctions, which was basically between brands, communities, and generics, and whether or not that was going to be an area of focus for the competition and choice team. So, Stan, I don't know if that clarifies for you. I think it was about communicating to them that that type of distinction in application type might not be a priority for the team. But I think that's very different than the string differentiation as a form of non-price competition.
I guess I'm not entirely clear. So I assume that we've talked about analyzing non-price competition. It seems to me, in many ways, the principal form of non-price competition that's been that's a result from the new TLD program is, in fact, the wider variety of TLDs that are now available, different languages, different character sets, and the like. I just want to make sure that, in fact, we're going to address those.
Yeah, and the answer is for sure we are. So it's a more technical question, which was had to do with the applicant guidebook and the differential treatment of brand TLDs and community TLDs, Dan. So it's not at all about different strings being made available. It's more about the fact that different types of applicants were treated differently and whether or not that was relevant to our work.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Okay. So what I want to do is confirm that we're probably going to communicate to the PDP chairs that this treatment of different applicants did not turn out to be a high priority issue for our group, and that if they therefore want to look at that issue themselves, that's a low risk area of conflict in the future, and how that will probably manifest itself most visibly will be about potentially proceeding down the path of looking at allowing more brands because they might be sufficiently different from the other GTLDs. Are there questions or discussion around that before we communicate that to the chairs of the Social Care Procedures PDP? Okay, great. So we will do that. The next area was that of universal acceptance. And again, I think that I think we're going to be looking at that as part of the competition and choice group because the lack of universal acceptance can have a dramatic impact on the validity of additional choice. In other words, if you have a choice of a new TLD, but then that new email address is rejected by your airline reservation system or your bank management web portal, then is it really a legitimate choice? So I think that that's probably going to be an area that we're going to look at in some detail is the question of universal acceptance. So Jordan said it was moved to our lower priority question, so I just wanted to raise that because it's going to be something that that the other team looks at, and is universal acceptance something that people think is important? Jordan, go ahead. Are you on audio?
Hopefully.
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Excellent. I'm in a moving vehicle, so we'll see how well this works. I just wanted to say I think that the topic of universal acceptance is indeed very important, but we decided to only look at it to the extent that we identified that there wasn't competition or that that we thought that there were impediments to competition, and then we would look into whether this was one of the sources of it. I think if the new GTLD PDP were to look into this while we looked into other things, it's possible that we would just have a happy confluence of events. We decided that if we needed that information, they might have already learned something about it. I also think there's a number of universal acceptance issues that are, I don't think they're necessarily in the policy realm either, but they're closer to what the GNSO Council will care, or the GNSO will care about than we'll care about, just in terms of rules and, you know, whether ICANN's doing it, so on. So I'd be inclined to identify this as another area that we should let them take the lead on.
Okay.
Work after the fact instead of the other way around.
So I think this topic is going to come up again in trust, but Jordan, your suggestion is noted. Do other people have concerns or objections to that if we deprioritize this and let them take the lead on universal acceptance? So Carlton has put in the chat that the technical barrier to competition. So again, I think Carlton, what Jordan is saying, I know sometimes it's hard to hear on his cell phone, is that we're going to look at whether or not competition was enhanced, and if it wasn't, look for the reasons why, and that universal acceptance might be identified as one of those barriers to competition. Hopefully I summarized that okay for you, Jordan. So it's just a question of how we'll get to it, Carlton, and it'll end up being potentially one of the explanations for problems with competition, as opposed to treating it as a general topic that we're trying to address for its own sake. Okay, great. Jordan, since I was able to hear you a little bit, do you recall if there were other issues? I thought that there was one that Jeff had asked us about that you ended up adding during the public session. Do you recall what that was? Vertical integration. Okay, great. So and has that been added to your document? Okay, great. And so we need to then make sure that vertical integration is part of what we communicate to them as a priority for us. Any other questions about the competition and choice team and its intersection with the subsequent procedures VDP? Jordan, I'm assuming that's an old hand. And Carlos, I'll look into how we can automatically lower people's hands after they talk. Okay, trust and safeguards. So the issue of universal acceptance comes up again here, which is there's obviously some negative consumer consequences to registering a new TLD and then not having it be useful. I know that my wife has had trouble with American Airlines and Bank of America and others with her .gallery TLD. Lorraine, perhaps you can answer this question about whether or not universal acceptance is a priority topic for the Trust and Safeguards team.
This hasn't been a topic that we have focused upon, which I guess at this point means it's not a priority. However, I certainly could see this feeding into, developing countries' issues in terms of impact and trust. But again, we haven't really focused on it. But I'm happy to have other folks in the team chime in.
And again, this isn't like we're blocking it from discussions for all future moments. This is really about a coordination call with the subsequent procedures PDP and whether or not we are comfortable with them taking the lead on looking at the universal acceptance issues. So I just want to reframe Lorene's question for the broader sub-team to see if they have issues with that. So raise your hand if you want to talk about universal acceptance in the context of trust and safety. Because otherwise we might follow Jordan's recommendation to let the PDP take the lead on this issue. Okay, great. So the next issue was name collision that I know that Jeff directed towards us during the open session. Lorene, has name collision and the effectiveness of the name collision prevention process, has that come up in your discussions in your group?
That specific issue hasn't really come up. The only related issue that has come up is consumer confusion caused by the use of singular and plurals of the same name, and just in general, the issue of similarly sounding domain names.
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Lorene. So this is a little bit different issue in that it, and again, it may not fall, and this is part of the question about security and stability. This is an issue of, you know, internal to an enterprise network. They may have had, been making use of .mail on their, you know, in their internal network, and that the presence of .mail being added to the public DNS might cause what would normally internal requests to get broadcast externally. And so there were some processes put in place to mitigate the potential for a name collision. And so the question is whether or not those were effective, whether name collision turned out to be an issue or not. It's sort of a, as Jordan puts it, a technical trust issue. And I guess the question is whether or not we're Jeff was hoping we would look at this, but are we going to tell him that we're probably not and put it back in their hands to look at this? I guess that's the question.
Now that you have defined that far more clearly than I first understood it, that has not come up. However, when you frame it as an issue of trust, and what I'm hearing really as an issue of security and privacy, i.e., are your internal or the internal portions of your website, which certainly could conceivably contain personal information, financial information, et cetera, are those being broadcast to the world because of some technical snafus, you know, that is a potential issue, but we haven't discussed it.
Go ahead. I was going to say we can raise the issue now.
Yeah, I would like to raise the issue now, and I'm just looking to see who, if we have a broad enough participation from our subgroup. We do have a number of people from our subgroup. So I raise it now to see whether this is an issue that falls under either privacy or trust issues for us.
So we'll give people a second to absorb this and raise whether or not they feel like name collision is something that you guys want to address on your sub-team. I mean, I can also ask you to put it on the agenda for your next sub-team call. But if people want to speak up now, then please do so.
Right. I see people are typing, but I'm just going to ask you a question. Do we have a sense about how big an issue this has been? I mean, do we have any data on whether this type of disclosures have actually occurred, taken place?
Well, no. I mean, I think you're asking the relevant question, right? So we don't know the answer, and so it's really a question of who takes this hot potato and looks at it to see whether or not it turned out to be a real issue, what the traffic really looked like, and whether or not the processes that were put in place to mitigate the risk were sufficient. So we don't know the answers yet, Lorene, so that's the problem in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
And as in the chat, I think it is going to be a fairly standalone process for analysis. Jordan, do you want to try to go verbal here?
Yeah, we'll try. So I do think this is definitely within the remit of the CCRT. I think the main question is whether we want to invest the time to understand it and to try to make recommendations on it or even findings on it, because it will be, I think, quite a large amount of work that has no interaction with anything else that we look at on the safeguards and consumer trust area, even though it's clearly in the scope of that. I think we'd have to decide it was important because it will, I think, be quite hard to analyze and requires a lot of specialty data that we're just not looking at gathering at the moment.
Thanks, Jordan. Hopefully everybody heard that. It was pretty clear. It is sort of a standalone topic and will require some standalone research and standalone analysis that's kind of disconnected from the priorities that we put up, but as Jordan says, it's clearly in scope. So it's just a question of whether or not it raises to a priority level, which gets to Laureen's question about whether or not it turned out to be a big issue. And I guess the problem is we won't know without studying.
So I would like then to raise this in our phone call next week to give our group a little bit more of an opportunity to think about this.
That makes sense. Aliza, did you have something on this issue?
Hi, yeah, I'm sorry. I dropped off in the middle of the conversation. I'm assuming we're still on name collision. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, so what I was going to add is one of the metrics that we're tracking is the reports of name collision that ICANN receives. So we have some data on this. We haven't figured out the best way to publish it yet, which is why it's not up on the website, on the CCT metrics website yet. But it is something that we're tracking. Laureen, I don't know if it would be helpful for you for us to talk about that, or maybe to have, it might be more appropriate for our technical services team to talk about the work they're doing and monitoring this. And that might be one way to introduce the topic or talk about how you might address it within your team next week.
I think that would be helpful to have just a short conversation about that because, I mean, frankly, it hasn't been identified as a priority, but I agree with Jordan that it's in scope. So I would be very interested in figuring out how prevalent this is. And if we have data on that, that would be very helpful in informing the way we approach deciding where this fits in, whether it fits in right now.
Okay, great. Let me talk to my colleagues. I'll send them a note right now and see what we can work out, and I'll follow up with you afterward.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's great, Aliza. Thank you. I think that'll help a lot to identify this. Another issue that came up in Jeff's slides that came out of the brainstorming session is interestingly worded, which is whether or not the GAC safeguards, et cetera, sufficiently allowed for freedom of expression by applicants. And so I guess I wanted to again raise that with Laureen and the Trust and Safeguards team about whether or not you wanted to tackle this issue of freedom of expression. I mean, in a sense, the way that it's worded suggests the leaning of that group, right? So
yeah, you know, in lawyer speak, we would refer to this as a leading question.
That's right.
Which kind of stacks the deck. We certainly are interested in the issue of the safeguards. We've prioritized that. We've identified that. We don't necessarily connect that with freedom of expression. So if what you're really asking is, are we looking at this through the lens of freedom of expression? I would have to say not at this time. But we are looking at the safeguards.
Yes, and Carlton says he's having struggling to configure freedom of expression into safeguards. And,
yeah,
and
as are we all.
I get it. I guess I just raised it because that's the context in which it will be discussed in the PDP. And so we can just let that go or suggest that it'll be something that we'll look at. That's why I raised it. Jordan's typing something in the chat. So Jordan says, let him have it. So if people feel that way generally, then we can marry their, as Jordan says, marry their analysis with ours as we produce our findings about the safeguards. Maureen, do you have anything else? I saw you typing.
Yeah, actually, I'm responding to Jordan's offer to chat about what Google's doing in name collision and saying, yes, I would be interested in hearing about it.
Yeah. So maybe it'll be good to have ICANN, excuse me, and Google talk on the next upcoming call. Okay. And I guess all after on here is that Lorena, we're probably going to need to coordinate with the Rights Protection Mechanism PDP as well. So they had that as a bullet in their slide, and we're going to need to do that as well as we look at that portion of the review. So that's all I had. I feel like that's enough discussion about these to guide a discussion with the chairs of the Subsequent Procedures PDP. Does anybody else have anything else they'd like to raise? Aliza, I think that's probably an old hand. Is there anything else anybody would like to bring up on this particular topic? I see Carlos typing, but I don't know which topic he's going to type about. Oh, a copy of the PowerPoint. Sure, I'll, Alex can circulate that as well. It was just a way to gather thoughts from that larger document that staff so helpfully put together and look at it through the lens of our own prioritization. Okay, great. Thanks, everyone, for that discussion. Let's move the conversation over to project management, and for that, I think Alice is on the agenda.
Thank you, Jonathan. Hi, everyone. This is Alice for the record. So we have two quick updates on project management. The first one is we staff have produced a project plan, a draft project plan, further to your request for an interactive plan that you can follow throughout the exercise. So what you see on your screen now is what we have. It's very drafty, if that's a word. So if you maybe we need to enlarge that so you can see what's on there. So there are different categories here, the first one being the task. And as you'll notice, it's very sequenced and step-by-step, the step-by-step approach. And then we've lined up the responsible entities for each of these tasks, along with the status, so in progress, complete, not started, et cetera. So we've made some suggestions here on when these different activities should occur. So it it starts in 2016 and then goes through 2018. So this is a draft, and we're still working on it, and we're having conversations with the leadership on refining it. So we'll make sure to circulate a mature version as soon as it's available. And then the second update we had was that we sent an email to the list yesterday to follow up on the conversation you had with Xavier Calvez in Los Angeles during your first face-to-face meeting. Xavier had given you a presentation on how he needs some of you to be working with ICANN staff on project management and especially the budget. So we sort of lined up some tasks and responsibilities that we would think could help you define who the right person or people should be for that. And I know, Jonathan, you had a couple of remarks on that that you wanted to share with the group as well.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if you folks remember from the face-to-face the conversation we had with Xavier about project management. This is sort of sprung out of the, and maybe Alice, you can put up on the screen the criteria that you're referring to that you sent out in the email. So this is a little bit of an outgrowth from the CCWG discussion on accountability and you know, getting community participation in project management and budget accountability. As well as, you know, some of the other processes that are a little bit less transparent to the community, such as the contracting process. So Xavier is trying to use our group as a kind of guinea pig to kind of get more involved in the budget process with them for the review team. And what we had said at the face-to-face is that I think that folks will be interested in taking on some responsibility in the budget discussions, especially in the context of when they're potentially given greater access to, RFP processes, for example, and contracting processes that might otherwise have been closed to the community. One of the things that's interesting is that thus far in the competition and choice team, there haven't been identified additional sort of large study issues that are going to go out to RFP. And so we don't have a good example to hang our hat on. I think as Laureen's group proceeds and as our overall group on the application and review process proceeds, we'll begin to identify some areas where we may be, in fact, be making use of our research-related budgets, and that will, I think, create a natural call for volunteers in that context. I think otherwise with the overall budget for the team, for the meetings, the face-to-faces, I'll probably be the de facto participant on that. But if someone is particularly interested in volunteering on monitoring how we're spending our money and our allocated budget, et cetera, then please do speak up and let staff know. One of the things that we need to discuss is the location of some of our face-to-face meetings. We have one coming up in D.C., but there's definitely been a recommendation that we need to move this around the world a little bit to make it easier for some folks to be at the face-to-face meetings that haven't made them thus far. And that will obviously have some budget implications. We'll have that conversation that comes. But I think, Alice, the answer is that on the general terms, it's probably me, but that as we begin to identify additional expenditures, there will be natural volunteers to manage the budget around those additional expenditures. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Didn't any of that make sense to anybody else? And would you like to ask a question? Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. I mean, having been in the position to deal with budgets in public entities, I don't understand very well what the exact relationship of team members and the staff of IB in this process, being far away, not knowing exactly what the procurement process is, having just short conversations or email changes over the web. The question for me is very simple. What's the liability of being involved in these type of processes or even decisions? I don't feel comfortable with this. I didn't feel comfortable with the idea at the beginning, and I don't know what is the underlying process inside of the corporation to have external people participating in the process in terms of taking up some responsibility of the decisions and the expenditures. I really don't get it. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. I'll let them from staff answer as well. But this issue of liability did come up in our face-to-face discussion with Xavier, and he made every attempt to reassure us that there was nothing that he was asking for that was going to introduce liability for anyone outside of his office. It's more about playing a kind of liaison role and being an active participant in kind of managing our budget so that it's not something that we feel is just imposed on us, Carlos, so that, again, like I said, it sprung out of the accountability discussions, and it's one more way that Xavier is trying to make ICANN accountable to the community is by having more active participation of the community in sort of project management and resource allocation within the team and things like that. So I don't think there's a liability issue. He was pretty clear about that in Los Angeles. It's just about playing a kind of liaison role and project management role so that there's good visibility to how resources are being allocated for the review team.
Thank you very much. This is Carlos again, and I agree and I trust very much Xavier, but when I compare this with the discussion on the paper we have to sign, it seems that we were in two very different meetings. My only suggestion is we should find 2-3 people that do it as a sub-team, maybe. I think that would help. That's my only additional comment. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Carlos. And I'm certainly open to that. I'll be the default liaison on this, but if there's others that have some interest in this as an accountability mechanism and want to participate in a little bit of a sort of project management sub-team, I'm all in favor of it. Carlos, I don't think there's anything to sign for this role. That was related to our conflict of interest document that I think we had the discussion about, and the subsequent statement of interest. And I don't know if we've actually gotten everybody those signed. If we got all those signed when we were in Morocco, and if there's still other people that need to sign new statements of interest, so we may need to get that on the agenda on other business. But that was the only thing that needed signing was the statement of interest, Carlos, and the conflict of interest portion of that document was our discussion about ancestors and everything else, right? But this particular thing doesn't require a signature. It's just a process question about getting the community more involved in things that have typically been the purview of ICANN staff. But I think we have a way forward, which is that by default it's me. But I would welcome other people to participate in a kind of sub-team. And then as individual requests for budget allocations come up, particularly in the context of research, we may identify particular liaisons to get actually involved in the contracting process and things like that. Other questions? Okay, great. Let's go on to the next thing, which is an update on the face-to-face meeting coming up in early June.
Hi, Johnson. This is Alice. Pamela will be delivering that update. She's posting a slide, I see.
Great. Thanks, Pamela. Thanks, Alice.
Pamela, I think you're on mute. Pamela, I think we're still having trouble hearing you, I'm afraid.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry about that, folks. The face-to-face meeting, the location is going to be in Washington, D.C. The dates will be the 6th and 7th of June 2016, and the venue is the Omni Shoreham. Please let me know, as Ravi did, if you need any help with visas, such as an invitation to attend or to help with from constituency travel. And constituency will be connecting with you regarding travel arrangements in the next few days. They do have your sheets. The goal will be in on June 5th and out on June 8th. And I will be forwarding a chart of the revised schedule for the meetings once we are done with this call so that you know how to plan. And that's all I have.
Okay, so does anybody have any questions for Pamela? I mean, presumably, obviously we need to do whatever we can to support folks coming from overseas with visas and things like that, so let's get on top of that. Megan, the Omni Shoreham is the biggest hotel in D.C., actually, up in Woodley Park. Any questions about the face-to-face or logistics for the face-to-face?
Yeah, Jonathan, David here. Just to say, I'll let Alison and the others know, but I'll probably be late on the Monday because flying over from Europe. I've already arranged things on the weekend, that weekend, unfortunately, so I'm kind of tied up till about 7 p.m. I don't know if I can get a flight out at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. If I can, I will.
Hello, everyone.
I'll likely arrive later on the Monday.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Can everyone hear me okay? Or no?
Yes.
You can. Okay. Yes, the Omni Shoreham is a hotel. And no, we were going to do the Mayflower, and we had to change the venue because of meetings accommodations. So this is the Omni Shoreham is much more comfortable for our needs and for yours.
Yeah, and it's much better for me because, like I said, I can walk there. So thanks, David, for the update. Let's get you here as soon as we can. We don't want to disrupt your fishing trip on the weekend, but we all look forward to seeing you. Any other questions about the face-to-face? Okay, great. I think we're on to any other business. I will mention the fact that I'm in conversations with IT, with Chris Gift from IT and ICANN about our use of Slack. There's been some, he's been giving me some Slack about it, so some pushback, but we continue to have conversations about transparency. The biggest issue is just IT bandwidth because they have so many tasks on their hands related to the IANA transition. So that's the principal pushback, but I think we're working through most of the issues. So hopefully we can get up and running on Slack before too long. We have another call scheduled for Monday with IT. I guess I will also ask staff, do you have updated statements from interest from everybody, or are you reaching out to people individually? Is that something we need to deal with? I know a bunch of us signed them in Morocco, but not everyone was there.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Alice. So we sent the most version of the statement of interest form and asked the review team to send their updates if needed based on the new conflicts of interest policy. It's not a requirement as I understand it, but if you feel like you need to submit a new one, please do.
Okay. Great. That's pretty simple. Any other issues that people want to raise before we end the call? Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. That was a great call. I really appreciate everyone's participation. And, again, I apologize for my condition on the last call. But I think we got a lot done on this call, so thanks a lot. And I'll be liaising with the chairs of the subsequent procedures PDP and sharing our thoughts on this, and we'll report back to you. Thanks, everyone, and thanks to staff for all your help.
Thanks. Bye-bye.